Reason, therefore, is the judge of good and evil. That which is foreign and external she regards as dross, and that which is neither good nor evil she judges as merely accessory, insignificant and trivial. For all her good resides in the soul. But there are certain goods which reason regards as primary, to which she addresses herself purposely. These are, for example, victory, good children, and the welfare of one's country. Certain others she regards as secondary. These become manifest only in adversity. For example, equanimity in enduring severe illness or exile. Certain goods are indifferent. These are no more according to nature than contrary to nature, as, for example, a discreet gait and a sedate posture in a chair. For sitting is an act that is not less according to nature than standing or walking. The two kinds of goods, which are of a higher order, are different. The primary are according to nature, such as deriving joy from the dutiful behavior of one's children and from the well-being of one's country. The secondary are contrary to nature, such as fortitude in resisting torture, or an enduring thirst when illness makes the vitals feverish. What then, you say? Can anything that is contrary to nature be a good? Of course not. But that in which this good takes its rise is sometimes contrary to nature. For being wounded, wasting away over a fire, being afflicted with bad health, such things are contrary to nature. But it is in accordance with nature for a man to preserve an indomitable soul amid such distresses. To explain my thought briefly, the material with which a good is concerned is sometimes contrary to nature, but a good itself never is contrary, since no good is without reason, and reason is in accordance with nature. What then, you ask, is reason? It is copying nature. And what, you say, is the greatest good that man can possess? It is to conduct oneself according to what nature wills. There is no doubt, says the objector, that peace affords more happiness when it has not been assailed than when it has been recovered at the cost of great slaughter. There is no doubt also, he continues, that health which has not been impaired affords more happiness than health which has been restored to soundness by means of force, as it were, and by endurance of suffering, after serious illnesses that threaten life itself. And similarly, there will be no doubt that joy is a greater good than a soul's struggle to endure to the bitter end the torments of wounds or burning at the stake. By no means. For things that result from hazard admit of wide distinctions, since they are rated according to their usefulness in the eyes of those who experience them. But with regard to goods, the only point to be considered is that they are in agreement with nature, and this is equal in the case of all goods. When at a meeting of the Senate we vote in favor of someone's motion, it cannot be said A is in more accord with the motion than B. All alike vote for the same motion. I make the same statement with regard to virtues. They are all in accord with nature. And I make it with regard to goods also. They are all in accord with nature. One man dies young, another in old age, and still another in infancy, having enjoyed nothing more than a mere glimpse out into life. They have all been equally subject to death, even though death has permitted the one to proceed farther along the pathway of life, has cut off the life of the second in his flower, and has broken off the life of the third at its very beginning. Some get their release at the dinner table. Others extend their sleep into the sleep of death. Some are blotted out during dissipation. Now, contrast with these persons individuals who have been pierced by the sword, or bitten to death by snakes, or crushed in ruins, or tortured piecemeal out of existence by the prolonged twisting of their sinews. Some of these departures may be regarded as better, some as worse, but the act of dying is equal in all. The methods of ending life are different, but the end is one and the same. Death has no degrees of greater or less, for it has the same limit in all instances, the finishing of life. The same holds true, I assure you, concerning goods. You will find one amid circumstances of pure pleasure, another amid sorrow and bitterness. The one controls the favors of fortune, the other overcomes her onslaughts. Each is equally a good, although the one travels a level and easy road, and the other a rough road. And the end of them all is the same. They are goods. They are worthy of praise. They accompany virtue and reason. Virtue makes all the things that it acknowledges equal to one another. You need not wonder that this is one of our principles. We find mentioned in the works of Epicurus two goods, of which his supreme good, or blessedness, is composed of, namely, a body free from pain, and a soul free from disturbance. These goods, if they are complete, do not increase, for how can that which is complete increase? The body is, let us suppose, free from pain. What increase can there be to this absence of pain? The soul is composed and calm. What increase can there be to this tranquility? Just as fair weather, purified into the purest brilliancy, does not admit of a still greater degree of clearness,